In part one, you've met a few of us that took part in the Mindful West Run for Mental Health Awareness. You've also heard from Susan and Anya, the music therapists working in Crumlin Hospital in Dublin, Ireland. We'll hear a bit more from them later on. A considerable part of our run was the fundraising effort that we chose to undertake. You've heard Anya talking about the importance of funds for them. Let's hear again from Brezzy of A Lust for Life.
To kind of give people listening an idea of impact of when we get, like, let's go back way to when A Lust for Life started. I remember Joe Castle, who's one of our ambassadors, one of the greatest artists in the country and one of the greatest hearts I've ever met, contacted me and said, I have this idea. I want to put this massive, powerful piece. I have the property and it's overlooking Waterford City. It's like the old hotel down there. And I remember I knew that building because I gigged down in Waterford. And he rang me at the time and he goes, it's going to cost whatever, I think it was, for all the everything in and get it in, about €5,000. And I was like, Jesus Christ, that's exactly what we're here for. We're advocacy. We need to create conversations. That's our job. And we just didn't, we had no money at this point in time. And we were like, how are we going to do this? And luckily, a friend of mine was doing a cycle and he said, this, we want to do it for A Lust for Life. And I was able to turn to the 20 people that did that cycle and said, see that massive 200-foot thing overlooking Waterford? Now that there's hundreds of conversations happening across Waterford, every day a kid goes to school, they say to the mum, what's that? And the mum's able to speak about that, somebody holding somebody up. And that to me was, which is now tattooed all over my arm, it's such a powerful image. But the point being is, that was our remit. And I was able to turn to the people that supported us and said, every cent you gave us was able to do that. And that is for charity for us. What we need to do as a charity with the schools program that we're doing right now at the moment, we're not doing a schools program so we get it into a couple of schools. We're doing a schools program so it becomes part of our entire curriculum and our education. That's our passion. And we're doing it the right way. We're doing it with the right people, the right supports. We're doing it with research. Because the reason we're doing that, Andreas, is because we've heard all the excuses. We've heard all the obstacles. Government has given us, well, there's no research in it. We're solution-based. A Lust for Life is solution-based. We'll solve it. And to anyone who's donating to this, you need to understand sincerely what happens with those donations. It changes everything for us. We're a very small charity, but every cent we have is put in the right places to make sure the right things happen. So everybody who's donated to what you've done, and also to Crumlin, I'm going to donate a load of my new kids' books, and I'm going to put, you know, as many as I can into the schools, or into the hospitals for kids. The reality is, I think over recent years, sometimes people got a bit lost with what charity do. Without the NGOs and without charities right now, where would we be? And I think it's important that we reestablish that powerful passion for charity, because Ireland has that at its core. And I need people to know, when they've donated to that incredible thing that you've done, that when we sit in to go, how can we pay for this next month? Where do we put that? How do we get that? Every single cent that's been donated to that pushes us forward, pushes us on our goal. And our goal is to make sure that our education system and our youth don't have to deal with this on their own anymore.
I'm Andrea Splendori of the Social Fabric podcast, and this is an account of our Mindful West run across Ireland. 240 kilometres over 3 days. A run for mental health awareness, to raise funds for Lust for Life and Crumlin Children's Hospital. A run to create a conversation around the importance of communication, communities and relationships. The show is co-produced with Kira O'Connor Walsh, director of A Lust for Life, and it hopes to help others understand what is possible. We had set a target of €20,000 to be split equally between the two charities. When we chose mental health awareness, the idea of Crumlin was at first a little alien to me. But meet Alan O'Connor. He's the one that thinks a cantaloupe is a mountain goat.
I'm going to get emotional now. 2.5 years ago, I'd never heard of music therapy in Crumlin. and 2.5 years ago I realised the value of music therapy in Crumlin. So what you guys have done is off the charts. It's, the difference is going to make the kids who really need it. You know, so this is amazing, guys. You're amazing.
Well, thank you.
Alan's first-hand experience with the music therapy and how it helped them as a family, as well as their child, made the connection to mental health very clear to me. Let's hear from Tony Lovera, originally from Barcelona, now living in Ireland. Tony is an amazing athlete, used to challenges and had to push himself to the limit to run fast marathons, triathlons and ultras. On day two of the run, the heat got the best of him.
So Tony, how's the second day going after the first day?
It's a struggle. I get to probably 42, I'll jump on the bike.
Okay. Good.
That's my plan anyway.
Excellent.
It's just gonna get too hot there for me.
Good.
Because I'm starting dropping my
That's alright.
Water. Yeah, the other water. Learning what works, what doesn't work and
Just sometimes your mind goes into a dark place, so you have to push through your lows to get to the highs. So it's like a journey that you embark, and then you discover new things that you're able to achieve. So it's a transformation. It's a journey that takes you to new places, a new goals, and new. Levels.
Fantastic. Well, that is amazing. I mean, 75 kilometers and getting up 6 hours later to do it again.
It's a charity. You're gonna be in pain for the next 3 days, but you're thinking about the children that they are in crumblings and they are in pain all the time, and there's nothing you can do to resolve. So it's you're in a better position to show or give something that's back that you like.
Yeah. It's really an amazing place though. I must say this is
The spirit of the task at hand, the charities and the team effort created a nice blanket for each of us to find comfort in.
First time here, so it's a discovery journey.
Actually Mark was asking me, did we do a Reiki for this? I said no, just on Google Maps, right?
Yeah, just on Google Maps and a little bit of knowledge from being up and down the canals over the years on the family boat. Just local haunts like Hazel Hatch and Salins and onto Robertstown, Lowtown, Alamwood last night. And then our stop points today being Dangan and a little bit past Tullamore. And even my cousin Mark yesterday, who met us along the banks on his bike, he was able to radio ahead to me last night and say 10 kilometers west of Tullamore is another fresh spring fed river. Because we jumped in yesterday, it was absolutely lifesaver. Jumped into probably a 4 or 5 degree spring fed river, and it really brought me back to life and enabled me to finish. Because otherwise I was looking ropey with the heat. I don't know what temperature it was, but it's too hot for running.
That was Ross Thompson. You met him in the first episode. Tony did run pretty much the whole 240 kilometers, by the way, after that little interlude on day two, earning himself a new nickname.
Lazarus Levera.
It was absolutely amazing, just sharing the 3 days and all the organization that took last 6 months, 8 months, 10 months, but just everybody, you know, focus in one piece, and it just the whole thing came together. And Andrea was the mastermind behind that. I know that you don't want to take care of it.
And here's George Coffey. George is our sensei. We always ask him what the pace needs to be. He's always the last to cross the line. He's the one that makes sure that we all get there.
Well, doing it with such a large group was different. Insofar as like running with yourself is really easy, you know, it's the simplest thing in the world to run on your own. And running in a group can also be easy insofar as if you're running with people of the same ability, everyone feeds off everyone. But when you're running in such a varied group, and you know, I don't agree that, you know, myself, Ross and Patrick, you know, found it easy. Like, there was parts, the first day now, till such time as we found that little stream, there was periods of that day now I wasn't very happy. You know, I was, like us all, I was questioning, what am I doing this for? I don't feel great. Will I be able to get to the end? So, like, although there may be this look, this steely look, or this, you know, happy-go-lucky, having the crack, the inner voices are in everyone's heads. You know, Patrick as well, I was talking to Patrick about it. You know, so everyone that did that whole three-day adventure, you know, you question yourself every day when you're running. You know, every little niggle, every little pain, jolt, you stand funny, you feel a bit thirsty. You know, we all question ourselves constantly. You know, there's none of us go, hey, this is going to be really, really, really simple. Like, the first day when we got to Robertstown, that last 2 or 3K, that was horrendous. I don't know whether it was physically or mentally, but, you know, I couldn't wait for that day to be over. Like, we may have seemed like it was really, really comfortable, but no, it asks questions. Of course it does. I think all runs ask questions, 5K or greater, you know. What yous were doing was, I thought, more amazing and more of an achievement than, you know, I've done loads of these events. So has Patrick, so has Ross, yourself. You've done a good few. You know, Tony's done an amazing amount. Liam Sweeney's, you know, done an unbelievable amount as well. But, you know, Sheila had never ran, what was it, more than 10K. Karen had never ran more than 20K. So that's the equivalent of me doing 300K. You know, if you want to just double what we've all done and all comfortable. And, you know, and then to hop into a camper van and make food for 13 or 14 people. You know, like most people after they run their first marathon, you know, are lauding it up with a beer or gin and tonic with their feet up, and they won't exercise for several days, several weeks. The girls went and did three consecutive days. Cara did three consecutive 50K. Sheila did a marathon on her last day. It's amazing. Like, you know, Barry, you know, running, he's new to running, you know, but every day he got out and he did his 20K or his 30K, hop back in the van and fed and watered us. And I just thought that was a great sense of community. And that's one of the reasons why I really like running, is there is a great sense of community, and, you know, everyone talks to everyone. Everyone helps everyone. And you know, I felt very privileged and very honored to be involved with that group of like-minded people. And, you know, it was an adventure. Like, I view all our trips as little adventures, little kind of, you know, we're still only 12. Playing out in the backfield, climbing the trees and building a camp, and you just have to be a little bit older now. Faith
is fragile like a feeling. And so the days progressed, and the generosity of people and knowing that we had well passed our €20,000 target kept us going. When the line is broken, and with it all we suppose we know. And somehow, everyone in the group started to break their own targets. I'm not sure if I can find it again, and I'm doing the best that I can, the best that I can.
I'm friends with Liam, and I was running around on my own a lot with the headphones in, and it was grand for little 5Ks or 10Ks, but when you're doing long 20, 30, you know, or longer runs, it does get a bit, you know, dull, and the music kind of stops working after a while, or the podcast, whatever. So I met Liam just after feeling a bit like that I didn't enjoy a particularly long run, and he said, oh yeah, we run with these guys on Saturday mornings, you should come along. And I thought, like, the social element was what I was lacking. Like, it was literally the day after I had this sort of miserable long run, so I went, oh yeah, I'll join in. So I literally only got involved just to sort of just to chat to people and meet new people in great, you know, around the town and that. And I didn't sign up there for ultramarathons or anything like that. It wasn't on my to-do list at all. A marathon, I think, is enough for any person. But when you get
you know, into the group and everyone's looking forward to it, and they kind of, it's very easy to say yeah in October, November, you know, when it's a long way down, yeah, I'll do that, yeah. And then it gets closer and closer, and you can go, oh my God, what did I say yes to? So Liam got me in, and then I really enjoyed the meeting the guys, and they're all such a lovely bunch, you know, like Ross and yourself, and two Chris's, and I could go on. Ken in particular is, you know, we work in a similar field, so it's been really good to know him and get advice from him. It's just been a great experience, knowing all the guys. And like I said, I think on the Saturday night, just got, every time I go down to Greystones, I seem to meet one of the team, and it's just lovely to have a chat and you know, to stop, and I just love that anyway, you know, checking in with people, seeing how their training's going, and just checking in general.
Meet Mark Donnelly. Mark is relatively new to our group, but very quickly became very much part of it. A genuine good soul with a wonderful knowledge of music.
Yeah, he was just so sure he was going to do the whole thing, you know. And Patrick, and I always in my mind had this little, you know, I needed to sort out, about 2 weeks to go, I needed to sort out what I was going to do. I was kind of like really sort of sleepwalking into it. I was kind of thinking, oh, just see what happens on the day and we'll see how far we can go. But Patrick was so, knew exactly what he wanted to do. So I did set myself the limit, or, you know, I kind of went, okay, let's do a marathon a day. Let's just get the marathon a day done. And I think I can do that. Even at that, like, I was thinking, God, what would I be like on day three? So once I set that, I felt more comfortable. Like the idea of 80K and 75 was just, you know, I know there was no pressure on it, but I suppose in turn myself, I kind of would put myself under a bit of pressure, just like, well, if these guys can do it, I can do it, you know, this type of thing. So that's why I set the limit, and I felt a bit at ease then.
Mark ended up running 60Ks the first and second day, and just under 50 on the third day.
Yeah. 60, 55, and then just about 47 or something on the last day. Yeah, and then I kind of joined in for the last 10. That was incredible. What a day, what a few days. Packed us over is probably the best part. I always thought it was going to be cancelled because of COVID. And here we are, we actually did it. Like, so amazing. You know, all I wanted to do was go for a jog with a few people.
You think you had to do it?
We ended up here.
But
now I can't walk down Greystones Main Street without meeting one of you and having a chat. I love that. That's what I'm saying.
Hello, Chris.
Thanks, everyone. I mean, some of you guys have been running together for ages, and it's just unbelievable how you just let everyone come in together as a group, and there's no cliques, everyone's all equal, and it's friends and fun. I hope to be able to walk again.
Like Mark, Chris Willoughby is a latecomer to our group, but like Mark, a great runner and a lovely guy.
But the elation of what we actually achieved and were able to do, you know, is still there. And those memories, I think, will stay around for a long, long time. And, you know, the biggest thing for me was we started out with a kind of a crazy idea of raising 20,000. And, you know, we're double plus that. And the difference that's going to make to the Lust for Life and to the Crumlin Foundation is immense. And that's really what I've taken out of it. I think from a personal perspective, it was great that it was a challenge that we could all rise to and all have our own different challenges, which I guess is a bit like life as well. You know, for some people, trying to run 15K a day, 3 days in a row, was something that was just unthinkable at the start, and yet they did much more than that. For some people, you know, running a marathon a day, like I myself, this was my second, third, and fourth marathons. You know, so I've now done four, three of them in a 3-day weekend.
That's a good way of looking at it. I never thought of it.
And I'm just curious what it was like as an outsider coming into something like that.
Well, the biggest problem is I don't drink coffee. That makes me an outsider to start with. But once I got over that, you know, the, you talk about the inner sanctum and the six of you that have been together for a long time and done a lot of stuff together. But, you know, I've never felt that in terms of this group. It's always very inclusive. And, you know, the great thing is, you know, WhatsApp's a great thing, right? To have a group that you can just post and say, go for a run, go for a swim, and, you know, someone will turn up. And that with a group of 20 people on that group, it's always different, right? There's always a different dynamic because it's a different four or five people that are there. And, you know, everyone is just welcoming and inclusive from that perspective, you know. So it's never felt like a core group and hangers on, as it were. It's always been just one team trying to achieve this thing together. Yeah. And I think that without it being that one team, I don't think we would have been able to, right? We needed every single person that was in that camper van to get us across the line. And everyone did their own thing and their own contribution to getting the team to the end.
And the more we saw each other pushing the limits, the more we looked out for each other to make sure that everybody had the same experience. You met Karen Kelly in the first episode. This is her finishing her first ever marathon.
First marathon.
Close the photograph.
You look fresher than that fellow beside you.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well done.
Both the emotions are coming out now, like,
that's really impressive.
Fantastic achievement.
That's absolutely
there's
impressive.
0.001 or something crazy who have actually done a marathon. So, elite club.
So, is the plan to do one every day for the next 3 days?
Yes. Yeah, I don't do things by halves, so I'm going to attempt. Well, do you know what, honestly, you think of those kids in Crumlin Hospital and their parents. Every day they're enduring something and they don't know when it's going to end. So this is temporary stuff, and if we can make a difference, you know. So I think it's suck it up and get out of your mind's way and know that, yeah, it's really for a great cause.
Fantastic. But just to go back to the importance of the money raised, let's hear back from Anya Moharic and Susan Hurley, music therapists in Crumlin Hospital.
Well, after we take the referral, like say, for example, the child might have an encephalopathy, like where the virus might have affected their brain. So it's affected their speech, it's affected their movement. So we'll try music therapy and see, does the child respond at all? And then we do an assessment in the first maybe one or two sessions. So we're looking at, how has the child responded? What way, what maybe instrument have they responded to, or what song, or what particularly aroused them or moved them? And then we would build on that. So if there was a particular song that the child, maybe they opened their eyes and they looked at me or looked at the instrument and maintained eye contact, then we might repeat that or elongate it. Or so each week we're, I suppose every session is an assessment and setting of a goal, because you're constantly reassessing. And then of course, like, we don't work in isolation, we're part of a team. So we might ask the OT, well, what are you working like? Well, maybe they'll be getting out into the chair and they want them to move their right hand a bit more. I'm just plucking these examples, you know.
I think it's important to say as well, it's also about the space that is created in the session and the kind of holding that is provided. And sometimes it's just that sense of that little bit of normality of life that comes in, that is what arouses the child or what makes them kind of alert to something that new that's happening. And that kind of, hopefully that therapeutic space that we create with them and with their mom or their dad, that is what's the agent of change. Mm. You know, it's for some children, it might not be one particular incident. It might just be the whole opportunity or experience. And then just to go back to, I suppose you were sort of asking if we would continue to see them. I we would generally, if the kind of therapy is going well, so long as they're in hospital and so long as the need is still there, we would generally weekly, as you know, I'm only in 2 days a week, so it's quite a restricted service really. So we would try to go back then, set up an appointment to see them the next week. And that's even quite helpful too for them to know that's coming. And in the ward where I work with haematology and oncology, we'd put up a little timetable on the wall as well, so they know 2 o'clock Wednesday, Susan music, you know. Yeah. You have their other things in the timetable. So it's a little bit of stability, a little bit of structure, a little bit of consistency, and that they know we're coming back when we say we're coming back as well. You know, and some of the patients I work with in St. John's wards, the haematology and oncology wards, they could be in hospital for such a long time, months and months. You know, there's a boy being discharged tomorrow I've worked with for 5 months, you know, and I'm delighted for him. He's going home and so good. And obviously we had, you know, the lovely sessions to close up, and it was such a journey, but, you know, that's a long time to be in hospital. And he had his music session. He got really into drumming, and I taught him how to do drums. Basically 5 months, you know, and that was his Tuesday afternoon. And every Tuesday he knew he had to be feeling okay. He had to be up out of bed. He had to be out into his wheelchair and fed and everything. And he was ready every Tuesday at 3 o'clock.
What an effort for somebody.
It was actually a huge effort, yeah. Now, there were weeks when he wasn't able to get out of bed, and he wasn't able to come down to the music therapy department. We had bedside sessions, but he was still ready, you know, in the depth of it all.
Faith is fragile like a filament. When hooked from end to end, it glows.
You've been listening to part 2 of Lean On Me, a documentary about our Mindful West run across Ireland for mental health awareness. I'm Andreas Blindori. Please join me for part 3. The music in the documentary is by Fiacnau Brennan, The Field, and Nevada. For more information, please visit andreasblindori.com.
Sure, if I can find it again, and I'm doing the best that I can, the best that there may be other men, but he's the only man I know. And having tread this path so long, there is no other way to go. While it's true, I barely know, or even like the man, I have no choice but to believe in him. He's doing the best that he can, the best that he can. Tell you now that I'm doing the best that I can, the best that I can. Doing the best that I can, I'm doing
The best that I can.